When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke problem. Propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
This is a big problem because this was all supposed to be scripted. It was all supposed to be easy. And now it's off script and it's anything but easy because the judge just raised the one charge that the White House most fears, which is the chance that Hunter was a foreign agent. And if he was a foreign agent, the question is foreign agent for who and for what purpose?
Okay, so, and that's Jonathan Turley, by the way, who's just going over some of this Hunter fallout. And I just want to kind of set the stage as to what the everything meant yesterday. If you did not listen to our discussion with Andy McCarthy, it's fantastic. I think you it's a must read if you're following the story. And you need to find that over at YouTube. We got it up at YouTube. And I know Lorraine also included it in a piece that went out in Substack, Chapter and Verse, our newsletter yesterday. So welcome to the program. Top of this first hour on Thursday. It feels like a Wednesday. But I wanted to touch on, I have a, Dana Lash with you, by the way. Listen Coast to Coast, Channel 347, the simulcast of the radio show on DirecTV. I'm so eager to get into this because I don't understand why Republicans are acting like this is a win. I'm very confused by this. I understand some of the stuff that Turley says here, but I tend to side with what Andy McCarthy was telling us yesterday. And the reason why I don't think the way that this went down yesterday is a win for Republicans is because every single day they have 14 days to basically get it together, and then they're dealing with this again. I mean, there's a better way to describe it, but I want to get to the statute of limitations, because every single day that they are waiting to get this moving, and they have 14 days, that gets us closer to the expiration of the statute, of the basically being able to take legal action on this. And the gun charge, one of the big charges that is up against him because it's a felony, that's that firearms charge. And that the statute of limitations on that runs out in October. So his attorneys are just going to, you know, they're just going to go through the motions here and the clock is going to run out. That's how I feel like this. I mean, we've already had it run out on two of the other big Burisma related charges, as McCarthy was noting. Those were two huge felonies. And so that's why I don't understand why they're presenting this as a huge win, because it's not. It's not going to be a win until, honestly, we control the DOJ. It's not going to be a win until that. It's not going to be a win for any of this. And I it's kind of frustrating to see this. And I was reading some of this and I was reading some of the stuff about this. It's a little frustrating because I'm like, I don't see why this is. I mean, I guess our side's kind of desperate for some wins, but not, we shouldn't be to the point where we're going to actually misserve our agenda by, I think, misrepresenting what actually happened here. It's just, I don't think this is a victory. And I'm honestly, if I'm being real, I'm going to be absolutely shocked if Hunter Biden gets a single, if he gets any charges from this, if he gets anything more than a misdemeanor at this point. Because what ultimately all of this showed, beyond any shadow of a doubt, is that the DOJ, you cannot tell me that Merrick Garland wasn't diving into this on behalf of Joe Biden to intervene for Hunter, because he was all over this. He was all over it. All of these attorneys with the DOJ were acting really in sync with all of this. And they had this, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge deal before they were going into the courtroom. And the judge had not done the basic her basic job. If she had not sat down and started asking some basic questions about all of this, None of they would have had this cushy plea deal. It's because she was asking questions and because she was going over everything. They were trying to get past that. They thought they could be really, really vague. And that's why you didn't have any kind of specificity in any of the plea deal agreements when they were filing with the court. That would have been public record. And I made mention of this yesterday to Kane. I'm like, well, this stuff typically, I mean, I know what I know and I know what I don't, but I know enough to know that that becomes part of public record. Why don't we know anything about the plea deal? Why don't we know anything about this? And so that's the $1 million question. They were so vague, and they were vague on purpose so that they could try to slip this past, and it wasn't going to happen. And this judge, everyone's like, oh, she's a hero. She did her job. I don't want to sound ignorant, but I'm not going to lionize people for doing their job. I'm not going to sit here and blow someone and act like they're a hero because they did their damn job. She did her job, and I'm glad she did, because we have a judiciary where a lot of people don't. And I will say this, for all the talk about Mitch McConnell, and people can sit here and run all day on Mitch McConnell guiding through all of those judicial appointees during the Trump administration. That's the reason you got this judge. And everyone's like, well, she's Trump appointed. She voted for Hillary Clinton, for the love. She donated to Hillary Clinton. You guys, does the left still want to go with us? She was appointed by Trump, but she's a Democrat. Do they still want to run with us? I'm so tired of it. Golly. I'm not being a cynic. I had someone accuse me of being a cynic yesterday. Well, yes, but I'm being a realist. You know, I don't want to have any confusion here. I'm just being a realist. So that's the entirety of it. So I don't think that... I just don't think that he's going to face... I mean, would you agree with me? I think it's maybe, if anything, he might get a misdemeanor charge, but I think they're going to run the clock out. Yeah. I mean,
McCarthy said yesterday the only things that could be in trial were the two misdemeanor tax things. Nothing else can be brought up in trial after this.
Yeah, because they haven't charged him.
Right.
I mean, what are they going to charge him with? He's not even charged. So we got 14 more days while the clock runs on statute of limitations. And that's why, by the way, you saw all of this. I mean, all of these attorneys were working in coordination with this. There is absolutely, you cannot argue this, that there is not two tiers of justice. I mean, did you see, can we play this? I'm pulling my audio up. Can you, I gotta point this out. This is the narrative that was kind of going around. Claire McCaskill is not the most articulate person, and that says a lot because she ran against Todd Akin. She's not the most articulate person, you know, but you've got to listen to this. This is how she was spinning. Was this on MSNBC 4, Audio Summit 4?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Listen to how she, this was last night. Listen.
What accusations and arguments do you think they're going to make, given this didn't go exactly as planned today?
Well, they're going to keep doing what they've been doing. They are going to try to indict a father for loving his son who has been addicted to drugs and or alcohol. And without evidence of the father doing anything other than loving that son.
What? Okay. What? We're not talking about Joe. We're talking about Hunter, Claire. He's just loving his son. You know, precious baby infant Hunter, 53-year-old precious little baby Hunter. He's just, you know, it's a dad loving his son, little precious baby Hunter. I mean, he's just, that means that Joe loving his precious, P-R-E-S-H-U-S, precious infant baby, 53-year-old son Hunter. That means that you have to look the other way when Hunter commits felonies that the rest of us would be jailed for in a heartbeat. That's what that means. It's this precious little baby Hunter. You know, it's not because of, you know, the bribery and corruption and the tax evasion. I mean, for the love. You know, it's because I love it. There's always an excuse. Well, he's a drug addict. He loves his son. That has no bearing on the fact that Hunter Biden committed tax evasion and committed a felony. Oh my gosh. Come on. But it's just, you know, he's just this baby. There's always a whole other tier of justice for them. We're going to talk more about this here. I want to make sure we hit all of this in detail. So a couple of other things. I wanted to touch on this thing that I saw today, and I started seeing it percolate yesterday. People need to stop saying that Jason Aldean bent the knee. I took some dude to task on social media earlier, and I don't mean to do that, but sometimes the stupidity is so raging, and I don't have a lot of patience, and I just don't. Nor do you, nor should you. Our patience has been run through these past 10 years. But someone was saying, oh, Jason Aldean bent the knee. I hope he pays for it. with those of us who ran out, downloaded his song, and supported him. Because there are some people who are out there. There's a lot of charlatans. Some of them have, like, you know, a lot of account. They have a lot of followers. They got their little, you know, their blue check. And I think some of these people, and I see some of them, and we all know, and I don't want to, like, you know, name names because I'm not trying to, you know, harm my own side. But I just think some people, especially people who present themselves as influencers on the conservative side, remove head from ass, do a basic Google search before you decide to run and tweet something out. Because one of them went out there and said, oh, Jason Aldean, they had 6 seconds of BLM footage was removed from his video. Like suggesting that Jason Aldean bent the knee. It took me 2 seconds on Google. Two flipping seconds on Google. Guess what I found? The video footage was edited due to a third-party copyright clearance issue. So Fox 5 Atlanta, and I know people are like, is that Fox News, Fox 5? Yes and no. Yes, but the subsidiary underneath it has a whole different thing, and they're like strictly like news, and they focus on local, but whatever. That's irrelevant to this whole story. The video footage, the 6 seconds, was Fox 5 Atlanta's footage, and they were trying to file a copyright claim on that. And it basically, Aldean's choice is this: you're gonna have to take the 6 seconds out, or you're gonna have to go to court, and then you may have to take the whole damn video down. So they just took the 6 seconds out. It's not, and it doesn't change the scope of the video. There's still other BLM footage in there. It's just not Fox 5 Atlanta's specific that aired on their station footage. And people were pushing this like he bent the knee. Now I'm going to tell you something. The left is desperate as hell to do anything to turn you against someone that you were defending. This is a perfect example. I read a Rolling Stone piece this morning. Those half-wit, single brain cell, cousin-loving morons over at Rolling Stone, they actually included the sentence in their piece. Quote, it's unclear why the Fox 5 Atlanta footage was removed, when they know damn well why it was removed. They just want to make it look like he caved so his base will turn on him. You are being played. And some of these conservative influencers out there are so damn thirsty, and they are so whorishly thirsty. They desperately want the clicks. They desperately want the attention, and they're outraged. They're part of the mob. Look at this. He caved. And they're trying to get everyone incited to turn against a guy they were just defending fewer than 24 hours ago. Rolling Stone goes out, it's unclear why Fox 5 Atlanta was footage. That story ran at 8:45 this morning. The copyright clearance story that I cited ran yesterday. You're telling me that the stooge over at Rolling Stone couldn't get off their butt and look online 2 seconds and find it was because of a copyright fight for that footage? And they included other footage in there. If he was going to bend the knee, he would have taken his whole damn video down. This was a copyright thing. We do not need people parroting stuff without the smallest effort of a simple search beforehand. Because copyright issues like this are common. You guys would fall over if you realized how many times I got my ass hit every single day. Because of what, Kane? I'll show news footage, and it's actually a news story. And then we have to go back and forth. I'm like, this is fair use, because we're talking about it in a news context, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes it is. Sometimes, even though I'm right, they're like, no. It goes back and forth every single day. It is so common, you don't even realize how common this is. If he was going to cave, he would have removed more, and it would have changed the meaning of the video. Rolling Stone knew why it wasn't in there, but they omitted it. And it wasn't just them. I have like 6 other major legacy press entities that did the same thing, all trying to bait conservatives into turning against Jason Aldean. Because why should they? They lost. Half of this is admitting that they lost. So they want you to do their fight for them. That's what it is. We got to have caution before we magnify narratives that are designed to hurt our own side. It takes 2 seconds. And I figured that when I first heard it, I was like, I bet it was something like that. And that's what Kane had said, too. And I honestly did not think it was going to turn into a big deal where I would see like blue check people who, you know, get online and start pushing this stuff. It's shocking to me. This is why our side loses. And just because somebody presents themselves as a conservative or Republican, look, the devil can quote scripture too. Doesn't mean you got to follow him. Question everything you hear. Always. This is further proof of it. We got a lot more on the way, including what happened to Mitch McConnell yesterday. And why should I care? Because I was told that I shouldn't because of Fetterman. Right? Isn't that the rule? Folks, your financial freedom is at stake when the government thrives on creating unrelenting inflation, an astronomical debt, crippling interest rates, and market turmoil that we haven't seen in decades. And now you have an administration that wants to tax everything that you have to fund runaway entitlement spending. You should empower yourself with opportunity and the freedom to pursue success and to keep the fruits of your hard work. And if you want to protect your future, you should call a precious metals dealer that I trust, American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by diversifying your portfolio with physical gold and silver. And all it takes to get started is a short phone call. And American Hartford Gold can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside your IRA or 401k. They make it easy. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, so first up here, if you eat Trader Joe's broccoli cheddar soup, I'm really sorry for you because they've recalled it because there's bugs in it. For real. 7 states have had their broccoli cheddar soup from Trader Joe's recalled because it affects 10,889 cases of it, according to FDA. Next, that's because there's literal actual insects frozen in the broccoli florets. 20-ounce product, Florida, Illinois, California, Texas, Washington, Pennsylvania, and Connecticut. Or you could...
Bugs.
Yeah, like you're already... Look, Bill Gates should be so happy. Bill Gates and his man boobs should be so happy. Look at him, he's so excited with it. All right, so in addition to that, we also have this story. I don't know what was going on with this lady. Some people have bad days. This woman was having all of them at once. Some naked woman, naked, if I'm going to be proper about it, N-E-K-K-I-D, like, just got out. You get it on a bridge naked and you're shooting at passing cars. San Francisco's Bay Bridge, where guns are banned. She had not even panties on. No, it was not. She's one of those people that you wish would keep clothes on. And she was pointing her gun at everybody. She was arrested by California Highway Patrol officers. They were trying to determine her motive. Pretty sure crazy probably is it. That's probably what it is. But it is amazing how, I mean, she's standing on hot asphalt. And then she finally, like, I guess, ran out of bullets. And she's just walking naked in the middle of the highway. It is, oh my gosh. And someone was taking video of it the whole time. Also, this is interesting. They can't build anything in Italy because they keep hitting ruins, particularly in Rome. And they were trying to build a Four Seasons near the Vatican. Well, they had to stop because they found, apparently, ruins of ancient Nero's theater. An ancient theater from Nero's time. So they had to stop. So I don't know what's going to happen to that hotel. Stay with us. We got a lot more in store.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle ready-to-drink coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
A firearm illegally should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
So here, I'm going to be, I think I know where this question is going. And I'm just going to continue to say, as it relates to this, the case that we're seeing in Delaware, I'm just going to not speak to that.
So that's the that. So that was Corinne Jean-Pierre yesterday. So that was after the all of the, you know, all of the craziness with the plea deal and the drama with the plea deal, all of that stuff, because they and we're going to talk more about it because some of the plea deals leaked out. We're going to get into all of that. But this was specifically over the 4473 that he filled out. And it was at the same time, according to his book, and I'm going back in my memory, it was the same time in his book that he said that he was on how much he was like going into how much cocaine he was doing today. Do you remember how much he said? I can't even remember. And he was talking about his daily drug usage at the exact same time that he had filled out this form. And so the, you know, obviously one of the questions on that form that you fill out, the 4473, the FBI, you go and buy a gun. You have to, you're asked, you know, are you using drugs? And if you lie on your form, it's a felony. And you become a prohibited possessor, ironically. And so he lied on his form. And so that's what this charge is. Other people have been thrown in jail for less. I don't care if he's the president's son. I mean, how many, he keeps committing crimes because they keep looking at the other way. And that's what Corinne Jean-Pierre was asked yesterday about all of this. Now, some of the details have been leaked. And I was going over some of this last night. There have been a lot of people that have gone and looked over, had done some deep dives on all of this. And looking at some of these details that have been leaked. I mean, it is amazing how this unfolded. Because, as I said yesterday, I was really confused as to why, and I asked Andy this. I was like, I'm just so confused as to why we didn't know any of the particulars going into this. And he, you know, ultimately was saying this is by design. That's on purpose because they were trying to pull one over on the judge. And when you go through, and I sent this out, this has been, I believe it was in your rundown that went out this morning. And in looking at, you know, the details of this, you really thought they were going to make this work. Like they totally had a deal. Like when they walked in and, you know, they knew what they were doing. They hid the fact that they had agreed, because they had agreed in this transcript of the hearing. And the transcript is 110 pages and it gets into the plea deal and all of this stuff. And in the memorandum of the plea deal, they actually changed the type of plea that it was, and really ultimately the role that the judge would play in it. And there isn't a precedent for that. And the judge couldn't find one. I mean, that's on page, I want to say, like, what, 45 of this. The judge couldn't find a precedent where that's happened like that before. So they really were. And Weiss, he's the U.S. attorney that was out in L.A. He was the one involved in this. They were trying to hide all of the different agreements that they had come to with Hunter Biden's team that covered, again, just what we were talking about, the gun charge, you know, these other charges. And, you know, she's doing her job and she's asking the questions on this. And she was one, you know, she was looking at whether or not she, you know, could reject or accept a deal. Because, you know, based on an agreement to a charge that wasn't fully articulated and wasn't explained and wasn't, you know, all, I mean, she got Wise to admit that they don't want her to have discretion to be able to refuse or accept the plea. You just have to take it. That's crazy. And at one point, she had asked, this is, I think, page like 52. She was asking about there might be additional charges. Now, this is one of the big things that came up yesterday. She was asking whether or not there could be additional charges. And this, that relates to the FARA charge, the Federal Agent Foreign Agent Registration Act, the FARA charge, the lobbying, all of that. She was saying to Weiss, quote, so you said there might be additional charges. Are you at liberty to tell us what you're thinking those might be? Or is that just hypothetical that there might be? And he was saying, Weiss said it was a hypothetical response to your question. She asked, is there an ongoing investigation here? He said, there is. She says, may I ask then why, if there is, we're doing this piecemeal. And he says, Your Honor, may I ask, but I'm not in a position where I can say. And she says, I think what I'm concerned about here is you seem to be asking for the inclusion of the court in this agreement, yet you're telling me that I don't have any role in it, and you're leaving provisions of the plea agreement out and putting them into an agreement that you are not asking me to sign off on. So I need you to help me understand why this isn't in the written plea agreement. Wow. Wow. Now, in the piece, if you get the newsletter, Lorraine has a great write-up of this, because she was looking at all of this as it came out yesterday. And over at Chapter and Verse, over at the newsletter. I mean, I'm telling you, that I mean, this is something. Can I just, the balls, right? I mean, I don't know what else to say. That's crazy. They were trying to be vague. They had to write something in the agreement, but they were trying to be vague so that it would just give just enough allowance for them to say that he can technically claim immunity for everything else going forward. Like, well, I'm going to, you know, if I plea guilty to the, I don't want any other charges for any other crimes I'm going to commit. And that's when the judge had asked at one point, have you ever seen a diversion agreement that is so broad that it encompasses crimes in another case? I mean, the audacity of this, the audacity. That's that private citizen privilege, right, Kane?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that what that is? I mean, I'm curious. I thought that's what it was. Private citizen privilege. We all learned that yesterday. Yep. By the way, if y'all did any errands, did you guys have your motorcade follow you? I was curious.
Didn't get mine.
You didn't get your motorcade?
No.
Oh. So they were really gaming this system. She was asking whether or not Biden could face charges for failing to register as a foreign agent, whether the agreement blocked his prosecution for such a charge. And it was just very, very interesting. It was a stunt. They, like, you know, as Andy McCarthy was saying yesterday, they wanted to run out the clock on the statute of limitations. That's what this whole thing is. I mean, she looked at everything. They just wanted her to sign off something. And she was going into the pretrial diversion agreement. That's not normally something that is combed through at just a procedural hearing like this, but, you know, and she was good for her. He was getting that private citizen privilege. Look at that. Just like Sam Bankman-Fried, by the way, the crypto king guy who got the charges were dropped against him. The campaign finance charge, you know, because they're special. But that's how it is, right? They're special. They're specialer than you are. They're more special. No, the plea deal is something that you'll never get. You would never get anything like this. And when she brought up, by the way, when she brought up how broad that was, that's when everything fell apart. Because the DOJ would not say in public, in plain language, the details of the diversion agreement, what it clearly stated. For the reasons that Andy McCarthy noted yesterday, the public would lose it. Yeah. Can you imagine? Good heavens. The DOJ and the Biden lawyers were not sloppy here. This was calculated. This was on purpose. They colluded. They colluded to get him off these charges. Jeez. We're going to talk more about this, but man alive, I tell you something. All right. So I saw this too. Washington Examiner has this piece. The Biden law that's going to set up a production and demand clash for electric vehicles. Washington Examiner has the story. The EV sales and manufacturing demands are on the rise after Biden pushed for the largest electrification transition at the federal level. And that's in the Not Inflation Reduction Act. It's the Advanced Manufacturing Production Act. And it's okay. So can I just tell you, this is stupid. And I drove an EV. I'm not opposed to EVs. I'm opposed to communist China and the materials that they have the monopoly on. So Kane, did I tell you I drove the space egg yesterday?
Finally?
Yeah, I did. I had to, because I literally had to. I had to go get my hair cut. I had to go, you know, I had to do some lady stuff, man. I had to go do my lady things. And I drove this thing. Didn't like it.
No, not at all?
No, my husband's like, he kept telling me, he again pointed out the purse cubby, which does not, I'm not going to use the purse cubby because that's, I find it inconvenient. My first problem was the damn cup holder, because I always carry, women in Texas, they do something that's, I don't think women elsewhere do. And Kane, you know this, you don't ever see a woman driving anywhere without a big tumbler full of iced tea, right. Ice soda, diet soda, or ice water.
Yep.
Mine's usually unsweet tea, water, or diet soda. I always have a tumbler. And if I don't have it, then I freak out because I feel like that's when Armageddon's going to happen and I'm not going to have anything to drink. So that's my first concern. But you put it in the cup holder. You set it in the cup holder and it like goes around it and then draws it in. Don't think about getting a drink while you're sitting at a light. It's not going to happen for you. The car only takes, it doesn't give. If you're like, I'm just going to have a quick sip. No, I couldn't. I couldn't do it. I was like, I just want to sip on my... It was not going to happen. And I don't like the fact that it was trying to be overly bougie. When I walked up to it, and it was a loner, I would never... And when you walk up to it, the door handles pop out, which I guess you can't use them unless you walk up with a key. Door handles pop out. And when you open the door, I swear to you, it goes, oh, I'm not kidding you. I don't need my car doing that. I just want to get in, like, go get groceries, right? What if I'm just, like, going to Kroger for toilet paper? I said toilet because that's how it's said. Southern Missouri is correct. It's toilet. And so I don't need to be stepping out and, like, alerting everyone in the parking lot. Oh, I mean, I don't. It's like it's basically claps for you. Like, oh, you got out of the car. Oh, and it's just weird. And the biggest thing I don't like is I can't tell if it's off. There's no sound. This is what it sounds like when you start it. This is what it sounds like when you turn it off. Did you hear anything? No, because it doesn't make a sound. It's crazy. And I had to double check it. I was like, is this damn thing off? I don't even understand. Is it off? And it doesn't accelerate. Like, I have a car that when I get in it, it is obnoxious. Like, I'm actually sad that I don't have kids to take to school. So if anyone wants to volunteer, wants me to run your kids to school, because I live to be in a car line with a car that goes boom, 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 right? I want everyone to think that it's either an old man or a 15-year-old or a 16-year-old and be shocked when they see me. So it's so quiet and I'm at the light. And when you take the foot off the gas pedal, I mean, the damn thing pretty much stops. So, you know, when you just roll up to a light, you don't want to slam your brakes. You just take off and you deaccelerate gradually. This deaccelerates too quickly. I don't like it because then I'm like, well, crap, I've got to touch the gas pedal again. And then do the whole thing. It's annoying. I don't like that. But it doesn't make a sound. It is weird. It's weird. And I'm driving it and it's just, I don't like it, man. It was like driving Eva from Wall-E. It was just weird. I didn't like it. And they said it was an SUV. It's not shaped like an SUV. But it doesn't have, like, it doesn't make the sound when you accelerate. And I just kept thinking, like, I don't care what, for the first time ever, like, I don't care what people think. I've never cared. But for the first time ever, I thought, oh my gosh, I hope people don't think I'm a damn hippie. I'm like driving around. Like I didn't want to take my, I'm like, oh my gosh. Cause I see people that I know in town from school and church all the time. I don't want people to, oh, you have an EV? Oh, you're one of those people. No, I'm not. It's a loner. Loner. And it didn't really have like a mark on the car to signify, to like detail to everybody it was a loner. Oh, it's just terrible. I just didn't like it. I didn't like it. It's weird. There's no noise. I missed the boom, 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 boom. I have a button on my car I can push to make it go boom, 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 louder. Takes the baffling off. It's amazing. I want it loud. I don't even want to be able to hear my music. I just want to hear the car. And I want it to be loud and aggressive. You know, that's what it, you know. This was just quiet, and then it sang when you got out and got in. That's annoying. I don't like that. Does that sound, isn't that weird? That's weird, right? Like, why do you need that feature? Why? You don't. All these damn EVs. Oh, that's it. Sorry, Mrs. Lash. All the loners are EVs. Sorry. I had a part in my car that was recalled, and I had to take it in. Oh, everything is an EV. Sorry, Mrs. Lash. Jeez. I'm going to Flintstone it next time. All right, we got to move where Steve has a stroke.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States. pulling this together. Another year, another standing room only event. And when I woke up this morning at 7, I was getting picked up at 7:45. Patrick, my fiance, tried to pull me by my waist over this morning in bed. And I was like, no, baby, we don't got time for that this morning. I got to get to the prayer breakfast and I got to be on time. And a little TMI, but he can wait. I'll see him later tonight.
I mean, it's a prayer breakfast. But, like, way to read the room there, Nance. Way to read. Learn to pander. Good grief. You're at a prayer breakfast. It's a prayer breakfast, and everything, the words I'm about to use are not incorrect. So this is what my grandma would say. She'd be like, well, you know, I was just going to go. You know, I was going to be fornicating this morning, but I thought I had to go and then get to the prayer breakfast. We cannot fornicate right now. I have to go to the prayer breakfast. You know that's right. I mean, get mad, but it's like, learn to read. Oh, come on. Pander properly. Goodness. You know, say something like, you know, and my fiance wanted to keep praying. And I'm like, we've prayed for 2 hours already. I have to go to the prayer breakfast. That's how you do it. Good grief, woman. And that is TMI. I don't need to know that about anybody, right? Anybody. Everyone is basically a sexless NPC. Stop. I don't need to know your business. I don't want to know your business. I don't need to know any of this stuff. Stop. Oh, why? Anyway, so way to read the room. So coming up, second hour. Here we go. We got a lot of stuff coming up. We're going to talk to our good friend. We got our friend John Rich is going to be joining us. We also have best-selling author Brad Thor. And I just want to address, because I'm not going to spend a lot of time in primary land because we're literally like a year out before first votes. But I have 5 acts, a stupid play in 5 acts. We'll talk about that coming up. Stay with us.
Obviously, she's lying, but then you know that there is going to be corporate press that are going to run with that and try to create a narrative. Now, there's actually been some that have pushed back because it's so egregious. Interesting, you know, when we got rid of critical race theory a couple years ago, we, in the bill that we did, we said, you must teach accurate history. You must teach about racial discrimination. You must teach about all aspects of African-American history because we believe in true history.
And that's true. I mean, they had the Stop Woke Act. They had a number of other pieces of legislation that Florida had passed where they were getting into all of this. And they made it to where it's actually law that, you know, you have these things that are taught. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Top of the second hour. And I'm not going to, like I said, I'm not going to live in primary land because we're literally like so many, like a year out from first votes being cast. I just can't. I mean, people are tired of it. We need a break. Let's, you know, we'll start focusing on it more heavily as we get closer to winter. But right now, only when something big happens or something goofy happens, am I going to bring it up at this point. And the polling, I told you how much I hate the garbage polling. Literally this time last year, Jeb Bush had a 2-digit lead. In 2016, Jeb Bush had a 2-digit lead this time last year. Or not last year, in 2016, getting ahead of myself. You understand what I'm saying? That's why I just don't put a lot of stock in stuff that tries to get out that early. And nor should you. Like, give yourself time to chill because you're going to be hit over the head and inundated with this stuff coming up soon enough. I am going to hit on this, though, because this is an education thing. And this for the left is like a 2-bird, 1-stone sort of thing. So we had the audio yesterday of Kamala Harris, who was going off on the Florida curriculum, right? And we talked about how she was getting slammed for it because that is not at all, you know, in any way how she was characterizing it. She was saying that it was, you know, the Florida Black History curriculum that was replacing the AP curriculum that they were pushing out there that was including queer theory and all this stuff. And it's like, what does that have to do with Black history? Like, Black history is already mandated by law to be taught. But what does queer theory and all of this other stuff have to do with it? And so Kamala Harris went out. She was purposefully mischaracterizing it, saying that it was encouraging racism. And they were focusing on one sentence in the entire thing where it talked about how during slavery, how they had slaves that had developed skills while, you know, in captivity, in slavery. And they had developed skills as a result of that. And they could use it for other things. And I think one thing was, one sentence was, could be applied for their personal benefit. And then everyone's like, that's racist. You're teaching that slavery is beneficial, which I don't know how that can be interpreted from that sentence. I really don't, because no one is saying that any of it was good or that anything. I mean, I just, this is why I hate any, you can't have a discussion in today's society because nobody cares. I wrote an entire book about this. Nobody cares about actual discussion. Nobody cares about an exchange of ideas. Nobody cares about actually reaching and talking and exchanging ideas with other people. People just want to just slam other people. They want to argue and have their viewpoint reign supreme. They don't care about anything else. That's it. No one is, everyone wants to be heard, but no one's listening. That's today's debate. And nuance is dead. There's no nuance in any aspect of any discussion at all whatsoever in American discourse. And with this, so this was the Florida Board of Education, and they had worked with actual civil rights activists who developed this, that developed this curriculum. And they had the former chairman of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights and Florida's African-American History Standards. He was one of the workgroup members, Dr. William Allen. He was one of the guys that led this and crafted it and everything. He told ABC that Harris entirely, totally, completely mischaracterized the curriculum with a, quote, categorically false assessment. Listen to some of the remarks that he gave here. This was in a discussion that he had. Listen to this, because he was talking to ABC with some of this. Listen.
Safety standards have set education back.
Well, I can't answer critics whom I haven't seen or heard. The only criticism I've encountered so far is a single one that was articulated by the vice president, and which was an error. As I stated in my response to the vice president, it was categorically false. It was never said that slavery was beneficial to Africans. What was said, and anyone who reads this will see this with clarity, it is the case that Africans proved resourceful, resilient, and adaptive, and were able to develop skills and aptitudes which served to their benefit, both while enslaved and after enslavement.
So that's the sentence that he was talking about. And so you had Kamala Harris, who went out and they were launching another, attack on the Florida education model and the new curriculum. And it was, you know, people who were mad because, you know, they took out the queer theory and all of this other stuff because that didn't really have anything to do with, you know, any kind of anything academically. Now, because it's a stupid season and we have a primary where it's, you know, one of the things that I hate about a primary, it's one thing if you're going to criticize candidates, which I'm totally fine with. I've never had a problem. I'm not even going to waste time explaining this because my history speaks for itself. And I've lived all of this so incredibly publicly, 3 hours a day, every day for over 10 years. I don't need to explain it. But what aggravates me is when candidates in any primary decide that they're going to adopt the attitude of the left to try to hurt our own side. I cannot stand that. Criticize people who do actually genuinely dumb, wrong, stupid, whatever things. But to try to create controversy where none exists, and then the left goes crazy over it because the left wants to hurt every candidate, not just one. And you think that you're protecting one candidate when really you're setting that candidate up. That's a problem. So case in point, we had all this going on. You know, we had this civil rights icon, this guy who, you know, he's, you know, this educational instructor, this academic, this guy's developing the curriculum with, you know, these other individuals. And he comes out, he blasts Kamala Harris saying this. Well, then yesterday I saw this and I'm like, what? So Congressman Byron Donalds, who, full disclosure, I know Representative Donalds. When I attended the State of the Union address, I actually sat and had Wisconsin cheese and crackers and talked with him about the attire of ranking Democrat members and, you know, who is the best dresser. Yeah. And because he can, you know, gossip with the best of them. I mean, I don't dislike him at all. I realize that there are very thirsty wannabe influencers in right and left sphere that want to take any disagreement and make that universal hate. But that's not how I operate. So he came out And he said, the new African-American standards in Florida are good, robust, and accurate. That being said, the attempt to feature the personal benefits of slavery is wrong and needs to be adjusted. That obviously wasn't the goal, and I have faith that the Florida Department of Education will correct this. Now, it might sound like he is just, you know, disagreeing with the curriculum, which is, I think it's more than that, because it's very easy to reach out to the committee. It's very easy. I operate by a golden rule. If I'm going to disagree with somebody on something who is a dear friend of mine, I'll take it back channel. And we reached out, by the way, to Byron Donald. Just want to let you know that. We'll reach out back channel. I'll reach out back channel. I'll try to talk back channel about it. But I'm not going to launch a broadside unless, you know, someone's not receptive or, there's really nothing else to do, and that's the only option. He could have reached out to Florida Department of Education. He could have reached out. I mean, heck, he could have even reached out to, you know, the academics who were creating it, and the civil rights leaders who were creating it. And he didn't do that. And I thought that was odd. And so he put that out there, and that was kind of a bomb that he threw out there. And I think that was on purpose. So that's act one. So act two, then you get one of the DeSantis guys, the press secretary, Jeremy Redfern for Ron DeSantis. Now, this was a document that I had seen before from other Florida, like parents. The commissioner of education in Florida, Manny Diaz, had pushed the letter out as well on Kamala Harris, saying response to false attacks from the White House on African-American history standards, etc. Redfern tweets out, supposed conservatives and federal government are pushing the same false narrative that originated from the White House. Florida isn't going to hide the truth for political convenience. Maybe the congressman shouldn't swing for the liberal media fences like the VP, talking about Kamala Harris. And he quote tweeted Byron Donalds. Oh, boy. So here we go. So Byron Donalds tweets back, quote, what's crazy to me is I expressed support for the vast majority of new American history standards and happened to oppose one sentence that seemed to dignify the skills gained by slaves as a result of their enslavement. Sidebar. Does that sound at all like what Dr. Allen said?
No.
Get that one soundbite ready. Donald adds, anyone who can't accurately interpret what I said is disingenuous and is desperately attempting to score political points, which I find it to be kind of an ironic sentence. And then he adds, just another reason why I'm proud to have endorsed President Donald J. Trump. Now, I don't know why you add that in there. I, too, like to just, you know, make statements and then follow it up with, and this is why I support so-and-so. That just seemed a little odd. Now, I know he's endorsed Trump. There's a lot of back and forth going on right now. Like Donald's, I know there's a lot of discussion from a lot of kingmakers. They want Donald's to be the next governor of Florida because DeSantis is termed out. So everybody's looking at Donald's. There's a lot of discussion as to, you know, the relationship between Donald's and DeSantis because they've never had an acrimonious relationship. Donald's wants Trump's, I guess, like backing or support. I don't know how well that's going to go, how well that's going to serve like future political moves that he wants to make. I don't know. But I just think it's, and for people who are saying that Donald's wants to be VP, that's not going to happen. And I don't think that that's the case here because he's from Florida and you can't have two people from one state. It's just not going to happen. So that is what immediately threw it into the totally headfirst, full on into the primary. Now, here's the problem with that. Because then you had all the press jump on it. Trump campaign spokesperson Jason Miller, who's got baggage of his own. And I know him. I don't dislike him as a person, but let's be real. Calls this a smear of Byron Donald, said it was a disgrace. Well, wait a minute. It's not a smear. Let's like make sure that we're using words that are accurate. It's a disagreement, and disagreements aren't smears. I'm not going to use the completely hysterical language of the left to describe a disagreement. For crying out loud, we're not doing that. But the bigger thing with all of this is that it's actually, there was no reason for Donald to say what he had said, and Kamala Harris was wrong. And yes, it can be interpreted as he was agreeing with her on that sentence. But here's the problem. The AP African American Studies course that everybody wanted Florida to adopt literally said the exact same thing that the new Florida standards say verbatim. Case in point. Quote, and this is literally from apcentral.collegeboard.org/media/PDF. Quote, In addition to agricultural work, enslaved people learned specialized trades and worked as painters, carpenters, tailors, musicians, and healers in the North and South. Once free, African-Americans used these skills to provide for themselves and others. That's literally the sentence. That's the sentence. Kamala Harris didn't say anything at all when that came out. Only after the new thing came out, and actually, I found that to be a little bit more, if you want to interpret it that way, over the top than what the new curriculum said, but it was because Republicans did it. That's why Kamala Harris spoke out. Now, if Byron Donalds had a problem with the statement, why didn't he speak out then? When the height of the criticism for all of that, when it included queer theory, etc., was at its peak. He waited until Republicans did it and then kind of used it as a thing to go after one of the candidates. Now, was that for the betterment of Florida education, or are you trying to use that as a veneer for a primary attack? If we want to have a discussion about somebody being disingenuous, let's not do that stuff. If you have a problem with it now, you had a problem with it then. Where was Kamala Harris's problem with it then? The smart line of attack that betters our side and betters the whole purpose of this educational overhaul is to say, why didn't the vice president object then? Instead, he omits that and just goes right after and makes it about one candidate. Now, does that sound like that's being genuine? I'll leave that for you to decide. We got headlines coming up.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Mm-hmm. All right, so why? A syphilis emergency looms and drugs are running low. A shortage of penicillin to treat a skyrocketing number of syphilis cases. It's so dire that U.S. health officials are debating the need to declare a public health emergency. Stop being skanks. Dana, you're so mean. For real, though. Like, you know, we all know how this works. But some U.S. medical centers are rationing the recommended treatment for the deadly STD because of the supply crunch. So, ooh, goodness. So NBC says trans swimmers are going to be included in an open category at competitions, according to World Aquatics. All right, so there's one. There you go. Don't denigrate female sports or male sports just to do your own thing like women did. Swimming is going to set up an open category. So the open category will be for the transgender competitors. That's the governing body of the sport. They said this yesterday. World Aquatics president Hussein Al-Musallam said the event would take place in the future among other races, but gave no details. Some think it could be this year, but they said that's how they're not going to have men competing with women or women competing with men. But if they're trans, then they're going to be in the open category. That's how they're going to do it. And a startup wants to create an AI-generated CNN, and I am here for that. Although in some instances, it sounds like that already. John Rich joins us next on the Jason Aldean Stuff. Stick with us.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
Welcome back to the program. Bottom of this second hour, your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Lash, here with you. You can listen coast to coast all over the country. You can stream the radio broadcast, and you can watch the simulcast YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV as well. That's a little bit from our good friend John Rich, who was one of the first people that I thought of when all of this stuff over small towns and outrage and all of that stuff hit. And then I was telling y'all a little bit earlier about how now, and I think I blame Rolling Stone for this, they were coming out saying, oh, well, Jason Aldean took 6 seconds of footage out of his video. And they were trying to act like he did that to bend the knee when actually it was a copyright issue with Fox 5 Atlanta. And that's how that happened. And that started running around social media before it could be corrected. Nobody bent nothing. Stop. Joining us right now, our very good friend, John Rich, who doesn't bend knees. He breaks them. And he joins us from his home in Nashville, Tennessee. Good to see you, my friend. And congrats. We're going to talk about your song, your new song. I'm so excited about this because you're going to be the next person we're all talking about. But I kind of wanted to get your reaction to some of this because I feel like there are a lot of people who are in charge of information distribution who have never been to a small town except to go to a winery. And that's kind of what's fueling all of this. And I just wanted to get your take on that.
Well, I mean, first of all, as you look at that song, think about, is the song true or not? Is it true? Like, can you think of a town, a small town that Antifa has attacked? Can you name one small town that Antifa has showed up to burn down and tear down and spit in the cop's face and flip the cars over? And, you know, light the buildings on fire. There's not one small town in America that Antifa has targeted. Now, why is that? Well, because they know what would happen to them if they showed up in a small town where the people love their families, they back the police, they respect the flag. They're not going to have it in the small town. They only do it in the big towns, where the big towns are run by people who agree with the reason they're out in the street in the first place. So the song is actually true. Try that in a small town and see what happens. You might have a different result. He's exactly right about that. And even Antifa, as losers, loserish as they are smart enough to know you don't go to a small town and try that nonsense.
Yeah, exactly. Because a small town, I mean, my family's from a small town in southern Missouri. There are approximately 301 people in it. And it has one stop sign, and it has one Quick Mart, and it has a restaurant that's literally called The Restaurant. And my mom waitress there in high school. And everybody knows everybody. Like, everybody knows, oh, you're so-and-so's kid. You're so-and-so's kid. You know this, you know, growing up in a small town. You're so-and-so's kid until you're, like, 70. And then you're so-and-so's grandma. I mean, that there's just no in-between. But it's like a country surveillance state. A small town, because everybody knows everybody's business. Everybody talks, everybody knows, and people care, you know, and that's the other thing. It's not even if it's like a leftist riots or anything. If somebody commits a crime, if somebody, like I was thinking of the story of this grandpa in Oakland who got robbed at gunpoint three times in 1 week. He pushes this ice cream cart, broad daylight, he's getting robbed. If that happened in a small town, you'd have the church ladies, people's grandkids, everybody running to his aid to beat up the perps. I mean, nobody would get away with treating anybody like that in a small town.
No, it would be a citizen's arrest. That's still a thing, by the way. You know, if a citizen sees a crime being committed, they have the right to make a citizen's arrest if the police aren't there. And that's exactly what would happen. You know, there's a loyalty factor. There's a family and friend factor in these small towns, because they're small, that you know everybody. You don't necessarily agree with everybody in your town. That's a fact. I mean, there's left and right in every small town in America. So it's not about politics. It's about, this is our town. We love our town. We back our police. We want our kids to be safe. And again, you've never seen Antifa target a small town. They only do it in the big blue town. That's the only place it happens, because they know they can get away with it.
It also seems like it's kind of interchangeable with community. I get the idea that the left does not believe that minority Americans understand community the way that they do, because it seems like it's not just an attack on a small town, but it's an attack on finding community no matter where you are. And community is community. I mean, you know, the people that, you know, you work with and that you see every day, and, you know, just, you know, live in your life that you interact with. I mean, those are the people that have your six. And it seems like they, I don't know what it is, they just have a distance from that. I think really, I've never seen, John, the chasm between the right and the left so big before.
Well, and I think that's part of the reason why you're seeing Democrats, as I call them, rational, middle of the road Democrats. They're starting to flock to RFK Jr. right now. They're starting to look for other things. They can't cohabitate with some of the insanity that they're seeing on their side of the party aisle. They're just going, I cannot. I'm with you to a point, but I can't go all the way down the road with you. And you're seeing that happen. They've overplayed their hand to such a degree. They're alienating a lot of people right now on the Democrat side.
Yeah. Speaking of overplaying hands, talking to our friend John Rich, you have you're not only do you have, I mean, everybody knows who you are. I don't even have to introduce you. Everybody knows you. Redneck Riviera Whiskey, in addition to country music, but also Old Glory Bank. Now, as I was reading this morning, literally about Old Glory Bank and everything that you've been doing, I was also checking out the story of debanking, because we thought at first it was just going to stay in the United Kingdom. And now it's actually happening in the United States, where I was reading the story of this one doctor, Chase Bank, shut down his business bank account along with the accounts of his CEO and CFO, because it looks like it's the vaccine or injection. It's not a vaccine injection agreement. They don't like his thoughts on, you know, the COVID injection. And I thought, we're getting to the point where this is going to become more and more commonplace in the United States, where you're going to be exiled out of economic activity if you have wrong think, like China's credit score. So this is where Old Glory Bank comes in. Tell us about this, because, I mean, I think you're going to probably have an onslaught of customers, because you can't trust anything anymore.
Yeah. So we started this Old Glory Bank conversation probably 3 years ago. And recall Justin Trudeau when the trucker strike was happening, and he couldn't get him to go home. And so his final play was to freeze the bank accounts of any trucker that was there freeze the bank accounts of the trucking companies that they drove for. And if they had a tow truck company that refused to tow a truck, freeze their bank account too. So they just started freezing everybody's money, weaponized their own bank accounts against them. That, and that ultimately broke up the standoff that was happening with the truckers. So we know that this is approaching our country. And like you just pointed out, it's already happening on a lot of levels. So Old Glory Bank, we thought, you know what? There needs to be a banking platform where your freedom of speech, all your constitutional rights are acknowledged and are honored. And short of you breaking the law, your money is going to be totally safe and fine. So we started Old Glory Bank. And we've now had tens of thousands of accounts that have been opened. It's at oldglorybank.com. Real simple. We're now starting small business loans. And it's really to that crowd. These are not like, you know, billion-dollar loans or anything. This is the regular old hardworking blue-collar American men and women who are going, you know what? They could shut my bank account off too if I say the wrong thing, right, make the wrong post, go to the wrong protest, do something that the government doesn't like. You know, the enemy, Dana, owns all the hills. A lot of times we're going, man, I just want to run for the hills. Well, what hill are you going to run to? Because they have bought all the hills. They own all the real estate. We have to be in the business as freedom-loving Americans to build new hills for people to run to. That's what Old Glory Bank is all about.
I love how you just put that. I mean, that's a scary thing to think about. What hill are you going to run to? They own all the hills. If it's not Vanguard or BlackRock, my gosh, where are you going to go?
Yeah.
Which brings us
to... Well, there's another point. Sorry, go ahead. If I can make another point about that.
Course.
So a lot of people have asked me when I'm on True Social, Twitter, they'll ask me about Old Glory Bank and they'll say, well, what's to keep the government from shutting my bank account down at Old Glory Bank? Hmm. And that's a great question, because a lot of people think that the federal government dictates to the banks what they have to do, and that's just the end of the story. It's not true. If somebody came and said, let's say you had an account at Old Glory Bank, and you made a statement that the government didn't like, and they came to Old Glory Bank and said, freeze Dana's account, you know what we can do? We can do one of two things. We can go, yes, sir, we'll freeze her account right now. Please, you know, we'll do what you said. Or you can say, take two of these and call me in the morning. I'll see you in court.
And I'm opening
exactly
an account today.
We would say we'll see you in court. And you can prove
that
to us why it's constitutional and why you have a right to freeze this American citizen's account who's not a criminal and not committing a crime.
Exactly.
But that's the difference. It's the attitude of the people behind the bank that's different.
That's amazing. I love that so much. People need to know that they have, as you said, a hill where they can run to, where they can, you know, they're not going to be exiled out of society or out of the economy. Your song, you got a new song coming out. When is it coming? It's called I'm Offended. This is, I'm sure the left is going to love this song.
Oh, yeah.
I already love it already. I just like the title. Tell me about this. It's coming out soon. And this seems to be the title of everything that is plaguing, I mean, everything in American culture right now.
Yeah, so it's so absurd to me that the skin of Americans has gotten so paper thin that we have to get offended about everything all the time, no matter what it is. Everything's offensive. It's an outrage. I mean, how many times do you hear that overused word? It's an outrage. It's vitriol. It's all these words. And I go, man, everybody's offended about everything all the time. So what we ought to do is all just get together and just scream and yell at each other, have a beer, and get over it. And so the song is called, it says, I'm offended that you're offended. Let's all get offended tonight. I'll order us a beer. We can sit down right here and scream and yell and cuss and fuss and fight. Yeehaw! That's the song. It's hilarious. Listen, Dan, there's not many things going on in the world that are funny right now. Maybe nothing. And so I thought, well, what's something I could inject out there into the atmosphere, give people a grin and laugh for a minute? That's this song. It comes out August the 18th, and it's actually part of an entire record that I'm putting out, 10 songs called The Country Truth by John Rich.
Ooh, I love it. I can't wait to get that album, The Country Truth by John Rich. And this song will be out August 18th. I'm offended. I'm offended. You're offended. So let's all get offended. This is so great. I love that you make it that you, if you can't laugh at it, even if you're on the left and you have no sense of humor and you're all hope is lost in you, because you have to be able, as crazy as things are, to laugh at some of this stuff, because I joke. I'm like, this is why, if there's aliens out there, John, this is why they're not going to come talk to us. They think we're all bananas. We get upset over stuff on a butter box. I wouldn't want to come visit us either. I think they should take us. Just take us. We're the crazy people here. So this is great. I love it.
It's like I said, it's an injection to kind of lighten the mood a little bit. There's a verse in Psalms that says, "A merry heart doeth good like a medicine."
Yes.
That it's good to laugh. You know, as brutal as things are right now, you got to remember to have a good time. Put a smile on your face, even though it's nasty out there. You still got a lot of great things in your life, your friends, your family. If you're healthy, be grateful for that. And go out and laugh at the situation for a minute.
Amen to that. John Rich, at John Rich on Twitter. And, of course, obviously, he's one half of Big and Rich. And you can find him at Redneck Riviera Whiskey, Old Glory Bank, and RedneckRiviera.com. And as always, thank you, my friend, for using your gifts in so many ways to help so many people and to also bring a little humor to it. We so appreciate what you do. Can't wait to get your song, and I can't wait to open my bank account because I know I'm going to be able to – I know I'm going to be protected. So thank you, sir. Appreciate you.
That's it. Thank you for having me on. Course, God bless always. You.
God bless you.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right. So I'm immediately jumping into this one. So I've seen yoga pants used for a lot of things, but I've never seen people put a gator in them before. This comes from CBS Miami. A Florida woman who was pulled over during a traffic stop was sentenced to probation. She pled guilty to 4 charges. And she, as she was pulled over, she told the deputy that she and her passenger were collecting frogs and snakes under an overpass. They were searching the bags, etc. They found 41 three-striped turtles in a bucket, and then she pulled a small alligator from her yoga pants. Oh. Yeah. So they got in trouble because you can't, I don't know if you know this, but you can't put a gator in your yoga pants in Florida. It's a big, bad no-no. Florida Fish and Wildlife don't look too kindly upon that. So just, you know, saying. Anyway, they said that the case is pending. It was a 1-foot gator, in case you were curious about that. I'm just going to say it sounds unsafe. Just, you know, a Florida man was pushing a stolen lawnmower along the railroad tracks, and he was arrested after a chase. No one ever gets away. Why do people run? You never get away. This is in Pensacola. A Florida man was accused of stealing a lawnmower. He's facing felony charges after fleeing from deputies in the panhandle. Escambia County Sheriff's Office. Deputies were called to the home to investigate a burglary. The suspect stole a lawnmower, AirPods, and other items valued at over $500. While deputies were on the scene taking the report, a neighbor said the stolen lawnmower was being pushed down the railroad tracks behind the house. Deputies went, they spotted the suspect, and they gave chase. And he did actually leave the lawnmower behind, because originally I thought, did he take it with him? But no. They caught up with him, obviously. They put him into handcuffs. He was charged with resisting an officer without violence, 2 counts of burglary, petty theft with 2 or more prior convictions. So that makes it a felony. So now he's got felony charge because of the number of charges. In Orlando, a Florida man tried to open a patrol car and threatened to kill the man in custody. Gainesville. Deputies are seeking more information about a shooting at a Gainesville convenience store. So the convicted felon threatened to kill another man already in police custody. He opened the door and was threatening to kill him. And officers intervened. They tried to handcuff the 33-year-old. He resisted. They detained him shortly after, placed him in a separate patrol car. That's also not a smart thing to do, because especially right in front of the police, because they're right. You know, they're right there. It's, you know, kind of bad. Just, you know, saying shouldn't be. Let's see. This one. ABC New York. A Florida woman shot her husband in the genitals during a fight over an air conditioning unit. Well, I mean, it is hot.
A little harsh.
I'm just kidding. The woman, Kimberly Dunn, a strange husband and the brother came to her Lake City, Florida home. They were going to pick up an air conditioning unit that he wanted to sell on Facebook. She sat on the unit to prevent them from taking it and allegedly attempted to fend them off with a stun gun before she shot him in the beans with a pink handgun. She told police it was unintentional. She was just trying to scare him. Yeah, she was arrested. She was totally booked. Contempt of court charges, felony larceny, all of this. There, she's being held without bond. We got more in store. Third hour, Brad Thor's going to join us too. Stick with us.
Well, the president called to check on me. I told him I got sandbagged.
Oh, no. How are you feeling now, sir? How are you feeling now?
I'm fine.
Have you seen a doctor? Or are you going to
Any
see a doctor?
Any idea what happened?
Huh?
Any idea what happened?
I'm fine. That's
dehydrated?
I have my disagreements with Mitch McConnell on things. But there's some about him I like, and I don't know what it is. You know? I mean, he's the guy who sat there quiet as could be in the Senate. Because remember, if you listen to the show at all during the Trump administration, I was saying, well, the second part of his tenure is going to be a judicial agenda. And he picked all these nominees, and everybody argued over him. And as everybody's arguing over him, it was Mitch McConnell that's pushing this one through, pushing that one through. And Democrats realized it way too late and then got real mad. But that was in response to this video that emerged yesterday. He was walking up and he started a sentence and he just kind of froze. And I'm not going to do the whole, you know, it was, I mean, he could have, I don't know if he was dazed. A lot of people were saying it looked like he had a stroke. If he kept having them, and I'd be like, hey, we got a problem here. But I mean, the dude is elderly. I'm not saying that as a pejorative, you know, he just, yeah, you do kind of wonder. Welcome back to the program. Top of the third hour, Dana Lash here with you. As you know, a lot of people use this stuff and they argue for term limits, which I hate with the burning passion of a thousand suns. And I think it is an anti-Republican, anti-American and anti-conservative position because you're giving the power of your authority to determine how long someone is in office to the government. I am very, very federalist on this. I completely 1,000% agree with Hamilton and Madison and all of the founders in the Federalist Papers on term limits. They opposed them and they had amazing explanations as to why. And I completely agree with all of those for the number one reason that I just listed. But at some point, you know, and it's the voter's responsibility. And, you know, Kentucky people like Mitch McConnell. There's something about him, though. What is it? Is it just because he reminds you of a grandparent? Is that what it is?
I think that's what it is.
My grandpa would do that. You'd ask him a question. Do y'all have a grandparent that did this? You'd ask them a question, and they just kind of look. He'd be watching WWE or some Western, and I'd be talking to him, and he'd listen. And I wouldn't be sure I wasn't sure if he was hearing me or not. Because I'm not saying this to be me. I swear that man pretended to be deaf. He was a gunner on USS Alabama, and so obviously, you know, no ear pro. So his hearing took a beating. And I swear he was situationally deaf. Because if he didn't want to hear, because he was surrounded by women, and then not until he had two sons, and then, you know, not until we had grandkids and I had male cousins, mostly it was women, because he had a whole bunch of kids. And I think he learned how to tune them all out. And I'd ask him a question, and then when I go, I guess you can't hear me, and then he'd answer me. I'm like, well, why'd you make me wait all this time, Grandpa? But it was so funny. He would crack me up. But he would do that. He'd stare straight. And it's like you weren't mad at him, and you didn't think that he wouldn't listen to you because you're like, oh, he's older. So you just you immediately give him a pass without even realizing it. You know? And I'm wondering if that's, I don't know, I just get some Mitch McConnell vibes like that. I'm just saying, that's all. All right, so there was this video of Dianne Feinstein voting. What were they voting on, NDAA? The military thing, military bill? Someone was telling her to vote aye. And then she finally voted. Someone said that it looks like an adult daycare center, the Senate. But see, I'm told I shouldn't care about the Mitch McConnell stuff or anything else because of John Fetterman. Remember? We were told that it doesn't matter. Have you seen pictures of him recently?
No.
He's still in the hoodie and shorts walking through the Senate. Everyone else respectfully wears a suit, and he just doesn't do it. We're just dropping all standards of expectations. We're just lowering the bar because we think he's too dumb to dress himself or something. I don't know. But I find that to be distasteful. But we were told that he just, because of that, you can't ask any questions. You can't say anything about it. So same thing with Mitch McConnell. Same thing applies. There you go. Same thing applies. Done. Now, speaking of lawmakers, you got to hear this. Woo. This doozy of a soundbite. Debbie Wasserman Schultz yesterday. Now, they were talking about this thing with Social Security and whether or not if you're having someone handle your finances, are you still considered, you know, basically to be able to be enough sound of mind to, you know, exercise natural rights like Second Amendment. And this is very similar to, if you remember, this rule that was being pushed during Obama-Biden, where they were trying to argue for the disarmament of individuals, Social Security beneficiaries who had individuals assist them with their finances. So this was on the floor yesterday, and I want you to hear what she says here, where it concerns veterans and sound of mind and your rights. This is a 17-second cut. Listen to this.
In assigning a fiduciary, VA must also report the beneficiary to the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, the NICS system, as under the law, they are adjudicated as mentally defective. This reporting prevents the beneficiary under federal law from purchasing a firearm.
Now, this was something that had been rolled back in 2017, that had been repealed. The House voted to repeal that in 2017. And this was an Obama-era regulation that was requiring Social Security to disclose to the background check system information about beneficiaries who, you know, whether or not they were sound of mind or if they were. And remember, he was even arguing at the time, and we were playing, I remember playing sound bites, and I've written pieces about it. And it was in my first book, too, Hands Off My Gun. He was even at one point trying to argue that if you received assistance with your financial planning or finances as a beneficiary, that that actually could be an indicator as to whether or not you were of sound mind or could be adjudicated unfit to be able to exercise your Second Amendment rights. And they wanted to limit the ability of individuals to, and it was such a wide net. That was the problem with the word. It was purposefully worded to be very, very broad, to where it was almost up to a bureaucrat's discretion as to whether or not you would be considered unfit. And there was zero opportunity provided for any kind of due process. So if it was determined that as a beneficiary, you were unfit, there was no recourse for you to counter that. And that's what they were pushing back during Obama-Biden. And in 2017, the House voted to repeal it. And they were using the Congressional Review Act. They were rolling back all of this stuff. And that was rolled back. So now they're bringing it back. That's what this is. They're trying to bring this Obama era rule back. And again, you might think, oh, well, it's maybe they're just specifically talking about people who legitimately have, you know, mental illness or who are legitimately, you know, unfit to be able to make such a decision as a beneficiary, Social Security beneficiary, and with their with firearm rights, etc. But again, go back to during Obama-Biden, the rule was so broad, written so purposefully broad, that it literally was applicable to individuals if they just merely needed financial assistance with their finances. So that's the problem here. And I don't have any really assurance that they're not trying to do that again. So that's the story there. But what she was saying on this, and there was a lot of outrage because she was calling the way she was putting it veterans mentally defective. I understand what she was trying to say, but she wasn't incredibly articulate. But simply being a veteran doesn't make someone unfit to purchase. That's the thing. We got to be really, really careful about stuff. And that's one of the things that also they were not careful of during that rule, when the time that rule was in effect, because that was during the time when, oh my gosh, if you have any kind of, if you have baby blues or if you have any kind of, oh, then you must be adjudicated mentally unfit, because they treated all and viewed all mental illness as the exact same, which I think actually discourages people from seeking help for it, because if you're going to be immediately penalized, I mean, you're stigmatizing it. So that's one of the things that you want to be, you know, always kind of be careful of. A couple of other things I want to make sure we hit, because we got Brad Thor coming up a little bit later. I wanted to switch gears here. You guys know Bryan Cranston, right? He was in Breaking Bad. So actors and writers are picketing, they're striking because of AI and a bunch of other stuff. But there was a thought that I had when I was listening to Bryan Cranston, who's a lefty, but when I was listening to him talk about the use of AI during a SAG rally, I want you to listen to this, and then I'll tell you the first thought that came to my mind upon hearing it. This is Audio Soundbite 5.
And I find it very, very ironic that we are all gathered here today in unity in front of an entity that is run by Disney. And now we've got a message for Mr. Iger. I know, sir, that you look through things through a different lens. We don't expect you to understand who we are, but we ask you to hear us, and beyond that, to listen to us when we tell you we will not be having our jobs taken away and giving to robots. We will not have you take away our right to work and earn a decent living.
You know that monkey puppet meme? It's from this Japanese kid show. And there's two frames of it. And it's the monkey puppet that's like looking at you and then looking away like, what? Excuse me. I tweeted last night. I was like, everybody at McDonald's and everybody whose job's being eliminated by automation over here, like, because it's true. Think about factory workers. Think about cashiers. Think about how many jobs automation has limited. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, people weren't concerned about that, or that they, you know, that there's no evidence of them being concerned about that because they're rallying for this. But it does kind of seem that there wasn't a lot of discussion over that until Hollywood got hit, right? Like, doesn't seem like there was a, you know, a lot of concern from these folks.
It's been a couple years we've seen some of this automation kill jobs in fast food and other places. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying. So, you know, just the thought that I had. Just, you know, wondering.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Rice assault. A man is behind bars after a late night rice assault. Like, actually, it's in South Carolina. This man is behind bars. He was arrested for striking a woman with thrown cooked rice on a Myrtle Beach street. The man, 31 years old, was collared Monday evening following the late night incident. He was charged with misdemeanor assault and battery. He threw rice into the vehicle of a 43-year-old male witness. No one knows, but it accidentally struck or purposely didn't have any of this. It's rice, a 39-year-old woman. Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. I wanted to talk about the, where's this at? Aggressive seagulls. Man, they can be jerks. They really are. They're the jerks of the bird world. Aggressive seagulls have forced a popular South Boston restaurant to actually shut down their whole entire outdoor dining section. There's all these videos and photos of these seagulls stealing people's food and running away. But they said that the birds have become angrier. It's called Sullivan's. It's on Castle Island in South Boston. People can't even eat outside. And the assistant general manager, I love how they talk about them. They go, they sit out there and they plan their little bombardment and they stay there. So they steal food right off the outdoor tables. They take it out of customers' hands. They had to put signs out that said, beware of seagulls. They said one, sometimes they'll come down swiping two or three hot dogs at once. They said that it's dangerous because when we have kids and elderly folk that sit outside, they're bombarded. And he says that the seagulls, they think, miss the tables from the coronavirus. And so for the past couple seasons, they've just been super aggressive. I mean, look, it's just nature. It's nature's back. Look, nature's back. Let's see. Japan's population is dropping nearly 100,000 with falls in every prefecture for the first time. You know, that's been an ongoing problem, though, for quite some time in Japan. The changing demographics are affecting every part of society. And so far, efforts to turn around the decline have not really had any impact. Every single one of their 47 prefectures posted a population drop. And that's kind of wild. Ooh. The Sound of Freedom, Newsweek, because they're still making lots of money. This is what gets me. So the headline says it reveals the rising power of Jesus in Hollywood. But it's not the rising power of Jesus. I mean, look at The Passion of the Christ. Look at all of the films where that there's been that you know, Jesus or the Christian theme. They've always done incredibly well. So I think it's there. I just think Hollywood doesn't make enough movies for that, right? And I don't know. This woman was arrested for stealing an ice cream from a delivery truck, and her excuse was, well, it was hot. Yeah. Okay. Well, So this is, let's see, for ice cream truck. This is 21-year-old clerk. The woman was violent. She bit the clerk's hand. The clerk suffered lacerations on the fingers of his left hand, was unharmed. He restrained the woman on the spot. She was handed over to police, who arrested her for attempting a theft and assault. 56 years old. She said it was hot. I wanted to eat ice cream. No, that's not how that works. Brad Thor, next.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
Welcome back to the program. Bottom of this third hour, Dana Lash here with you. You can listen coast to coast. You can watch the simulcast of the radio program as well online, channel 347, DirecTV, and 2. I'm very lucky in that I have a friend who it makes my family members very jealous because they're all major fans of my next guest and a longtime friend of mine, very talented, successful New York Times best-selling author. And they're always, whenever he's on, they're always like, I see you had Mr. Thor on today. And it's always Mr. Thor. Like, everyone's too terrified to call him Brad. Brad Thor joins us now from perhaps, I got to say, I think that's one of the best decorated offices or rooms I've ever seen. It's so swanky. Brad, it's so good to see you. Love the room.
It's good. It's so nice to see you, Dana. Yeah, this is in my office here. So pretty cool.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Well, see, it's easy to write such great books when you have a space like that to write in. All right. So we're here. Your congratulations, by the way, your latest book, Deadfall. This is very interesting, too, by the way, when I was diving into this, because, you know, obviously we've had all these headlines with Russia, Ukraine. I mean, this is, you know, the Russian mercenary. And I was just thinking of, it looked like a faux coup that was happening in Russia with their mercenary group, the Wagner group or Wagner group. That you have got to be, you write a book like every year, you have to be a little nervous when you're matching headlines, because you never know how the news is going to come out. How do you do that? Because you always beat them. You beat the headlines when it goes to print. And it always works out in your favor. So you're magical somehow.
I'm lucky is what it is. It's just a lot of hard work and trying to stay just a couple of steps ahead of the news cycle. But Dana, I grew up reading like Alistair MacLean, all these great World War II thrillers. And I always wanted to take my modern hero, Scott Harvath, and drop him into something like that and never had the chance until now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I love Saving Private Ryan, Band of Brothers, Fury with Brad Pitt, the tank movie. And I said, oh, if I could ever do that with Harvath. And that's what I've done with Deadfall, is take Harvath and drop him into that conflict. And that was the jumping off point for this summer's thriller.
Yeah. And for people who don't, if they've never read this series, Scott Harvath is the protagonist in your series. He's the main character. And you can really start in anywhere. I mean, I think when I first started reading, I did not start with your first book. When I started reading yours, I was trying to remember what book I started with. I did not read any of it in chronological order at all, but you don't have to, you can dive in anywhere. But that's like, that seems natural that Harvath would go into this type of setting, and the news just, I mean, it really whets the appetite for it as well, because we're seeing all of this happen and there's a lot of, you know, like callbacks to Cold War era. So that makes perfect sense that he would be in this setting. Give people, if they haven't checked this book out yet and your book is out now, kind of give us the lay of the land here. What is he walking into? Because, I mean, you're up against Russian mercenaries at this point.
Yep. So Harvath gets the word that an American citizen got trapped in Ukraine behind enemy lines. The United States can't commit a force to go in and try to pull her out, because that would mean putting boots on the ground in Ukraine, and the Russians could say, we're now at war with the United States. So Harvath, they can disavow. And they send Harvath by himself. The Ukrainians are so bogged down with the war, they can't really give him any support. He's allowed to grab three guys out of the Ukrainian Foreign Legion and take them, all English speakers, and try to track this woman down. And Harvath's got one job: find her, and then if you can, kill every single person who took her. And that's the Wagner group. This is a splinter group that went rogue off the Wagner group. And I actually based this on what happened towards the end of World War II, where Hitler sent his worst SS Brigade into Poland. Whoa, and some of the most horrific war crimes in World War II were committed by this SS Brigade, where they were recruiting from prisons and insane asylums, the same way the real-life Wagner Group today is doing the same thing. So Francis Fukuyama said, history doesn't repeat, but it does rhyme. And I said, okay, this is my chance to take my contemporary guy and do a World War II style Where Eagles Dare, Guns of Navarone kind of a thriller. And that's what I did with Deadfall.
We're talking with our good friend Brad Thor, New York Times bestselling author. His latest thriller, Deadfall. Everything that we've been seeing with Ukraine, Russia, and the Wagner Group. Because while you're reading the book, I mean, it's almost like you're casting from the news too. Because you're seeing this. I'm not even going to try to pronounce Prigozhin, the guy's name, who's head of the Wagner Group. When all these headlines
Prigozhin,
were coming out,
Prigozhin.
Yes,
yeah.
Prigozhin. Thank you. The Wagner Group is the only thing I'm going to get out of that. The other names, I'm like, there's too many consonants. It's not going to happen. You hit the nail on the head. They were recruiting some of the stories we were getting, like these low lives and these murderers and and I get that some of it, you know, is psychological warfare, but oh my gosh, your mind really sets the stage. And then you see this one guy, Harvath, this one guy, our one American guy who's got to go in there and save the day, and he's up against, but he can do it. I mean, he's done it before. He can do it. He's going to do it again. The last time we talked, you were telling me, because I was asking you, well, you know, where's this going to go? Because this is, you know, you've had a very, I mean, Harvath is a very successful character in this genre. And, you know, people were talking, you know, where is it going to go to the screen? Are you going to do like video games? Like, there's like so much room for activities here, Brad. Can you tell us anything?
Well, so the book's got optioned by a major Hollywood studio, and we were about to go out with it as a television series, starting with Harvath more in contemporary times where he is right now, and then the writer's strike happened.
Oh my gosh.
So we had to push pause, and so I've been sworn to secrecy on who's on board. We've got this incredible A-list Hollywood team on board, and unfortunately, during the strike, we had brought on board as our lead writer Manny Coto, who wrote most of the 24 episodes.
Wow, yeah.
I love 24. Yeah, and he's a legend in Hollywood. He gets Harvath. He understands the mindset of the special operations community. The perfect, perfect writer. And sadly, Manny passed away 2 weeks ago from pancreatic cancer. So unfortunately, we lost him. We'll never be able to replace him. We'll find another great writer, but it won't be Manny Coto. So, and right now, we have to wait for the writer's strike to be over until we can talk to writers. We're not allowed in the interim to speak with them.
Ooh,
that's part of the strike.
I can't wait to see that. I can't wait. And even, I'm just saying, you know, video game, I think a lot of people would like to be able to play Harvath, you know, and going through some of these theaters and being, I'm just saying, you know, that'd be very cool. Well, this book, Deadfall, I love this because I'm a history buff. I love World War II. I love World War I. You know, I had family in World War II on either side, not in terms of like the axis of evil, but we had people in France and we had people in the Pacific. Love Cold War as well. And so this really, I love the setting for it. And I love this character. He's such a strong character. And you really, you put everything against this guy. Everything in the world you can put, you stack everything against him. And he still is able to come out and win the day. And we need more stories like that. We need American heroes that we can cheer for, especially with everything right now.
Amen. I agree. It's what they taught us in college when I went through the creative writing program at the University of Southern California was they said, it's Rocky or Jesus. It is a lovable protagonist who struggles against seemingly insurmountable odds and achieves success in the end. That was always kind of our framework when we went through the program at USC. So it's, I'm not saying Harvath is Rocky or Jesus, but it is that likable protagonist who has to struggle and you don't think he's going to make it. And he does. And you love to cheer for him and you love to see him stack up the bodies of the bad guys.
Yeah, exactly. Well, congratulations on this book. This is your latest Deadfall, which you can get it now. You can go to his website. You can go to Brad's website. You can find Brad on Twitter, Brad Thor as well, and see it. Congratulations, my friend. It's been a long time since I've seen the last time I think I saw you in person. I think it was in Los Angeles. It was in sad circumstances.
Sad circumstances.
But that's the last time I've seen you. So if you're ever in the Texas area, please holler. We'd love to see you again. All right. Thank you. Congrats,
great.
My friend.
Thanks, David.
Of course. This great book, and you guys can go and see and go and get this book now, Deadfall. I'll say I always like to order from like independent bookstores because you guys know how they do the ring. Although he doesn't really, I mean, New York Times bestseller. He's already been through this. But when you buy from, and they really penalize, I think we're conservatives by books. So if you buy like from Walmart, or if you buy like even on Amazon or Costco, a lot of people buy from Costco, you realize that they weigh those, they have those weighted less than they do if you buy it from like a Books a Million or Barnes and Noble. Isn't that snotty? But that's what they do. And I mean, think about where most average everyday Americans get their books. Where you get your book at? I mean, I'll be in a Costco. You see the tables of books. I get lost. I forget my whole shopping list. I'm like, wait a second. And then I'm like lost over here. A couple of other things. If you get the newsletter, if you sign up at Substack and you get chapter and verse, you get a lot of, you know, deep dives on breaking news. And every now and then I send out some weird stuff, like things that I'm reading, things like that. There were two things that you've got to check out. And I sent this out on Tuesday to our subscribers. And it hits two things. One of them, actually, and I haven't seen the Barbie movie, and we talked about this. But one of them was a deep dive interpretation of, you know, are people... when you think of the Barbie film, many have been asking whether the film was an intentionally withering criticism of modern feminism. Now, there was one thought on this where and I link it up on the newsletter, where someone was saying that the Barbie movie is Ken's bloodless revolt against the longhouse. And you know what the longhouse is? It's the long where everybody comes together, et cetera, et cetera. And the author wrote, Ken is you, and he's an exaggerated Western man in the 21st century, anxious, confused, chasing women who don't care about him. He exits the longhouse, which in this case is the Barbie's Malibu world, and discovers his own will to power. And like you, he decides to bring this knowledge back to his fellow men. Ken is the exaggerated antagonist turned hero. Gosling is surrounded by other Kens, all of which have the same sole goal, get Barbie's attention. Like crabs in a bucket, the Kens are constantly pulling each other down in an effort to impress her, an all too familiar sight. Ken starts off as the feminist ideal man, a totally subservient man with a desire for Barbie that is not even sexual, it's just programming. He does not even know why he wants to sleep over, he just knows that it's something he should want. And this all changes when Ken has an opportunity to leave the longhouse for a taste of the exaggerated patriarchal real world. Ken is immediately inspired by the achievements of the Faustian man. He develops a fascination with horses, high IQ professionals, and feels respected. Rather than stay in a world where men are obviously better off, Ken decides to return. Like a Prometheus, Ken brings the fire of will to power back to the other Kens. Men who he was competing with just days before. Men who he was long pitted against in the longhouse. And just as young women are subjected to long lectures on feminist talking points, Barbie is an exaggeration of this very real divide between men, women, feminists today. And Ken's desire for Barbie brought him to the edge, but it was his desire to rise above the mass of Kens that pushed him to take the leap. And when he landed, he learned of a world better than his own. And rather than dream it, he shared the knowledge to change his reality forever. Ken doesn't just exit the longhouse. Nay, he returns to burn it down. I was thinking of that. I'm like, you know what? I mean, I'm inclined to kind of follow Occam's razor here. But it also could be just a really simply a story of surrender as feminism is out of ideas. Because in order to continue this grift of oppression, they got to put a skirt on a Ken. I mean, think about it. Like, what else do feminists have to bitch about? So they got to create a problem. I'm just saying, I'm theorizing here. So It dives into all of this. And then I ask, you know, it's when Ken, fresh from the real world and humming with his newfound power of masculinity, brings the patriarchy to the stagnant plasticine world of Barbie, that Barbie land jolts forward in innovation. And Barbie's even apparently felt unfulfilled in this stagnant, hopeless old world order. So I'm just saying, it could be a boring, mean-spirited rebuke of the patriarchy, or it could be an inadvertent, accidental telling of the hopelessness and ultimate surrender and failure of feminism. I don't know. It's like a Rorschach test. Still not going to go pay to see it. And then lastly, also in that, third places. A real quick thing, it talks about architecture third places and how the internet is the new third place. Go read it. It's over at Substack, chapter and verse. Subscribers, you got it Tuesday.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
It's really a climate disaster that we're seeing firsthand across the globe. We need to be clear when we talk about hot weather. Heat kills more New Yorkers every year than any other kind of extreme weather event. And access to cooling is a matter of life and death.
Access to cooling. What did people do before? Oh my gosh. You know what it's called? It's called summer. Summer. I mean, I don't know. I was lucky. I went to a school that taught this. Summer is, you know, opposite of winter. It's one of the seasons, and it's when things get warmer because of the way the earth, you know, is rotated towards the sun, and it's warmer up here in this hemisphere. And it's, you know, that means that you get hotter temperatures, you know, Kane, it's sunnier.
Yeah,
because it's summer.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Like, it's the opposite when it's winter.
Very true.
Uh-huh. And in summer, you know, what's like the one thing of when you think of summer? Like hot weather. It's kind of a characteristic of it. It's a climate disaster. Or summer. You know, that's not really exactly a climate disaster, but I mean, it's good heavens. This is all. Some of the stuff that people keep pushing for this is so crazy. It's goofy. Go and sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. There's all kinds of good stuff that comes out on that. We have all of the Hunter Biden stuff up. And of course, you get your daily dose of Show Prep 2 that goes out to all subscribers. And you can get all of the discussions that we have with our guests over on YouTube. And if you did not see the one with Andy McCarthy, I highly encourage you to go and watch it because it's so good. And he really, I think his take on it is uniquely different. And I'm side with him on this. I don't think that this is not a bad thing for Hunter Biden. They're running the clock down on purpose. They need you to think that this is bad. That's their cover so that no one will try to do anything else to, you know, intervene. All right. Today in stupidity. What do we got?
Our president of the United States is also out there making people scared about the climate.
This is
what he was saying today on how you can actually help yourself during this crisis. Listen to this.
A number of programs to do everything from allow people to have the ability to get help to literally paint the roofs white.
Oh. Well, you could just paint your roof white. Why didn't anybody think about that? Paint your roof.
I've heard of like lifting up the roof, but
raising the roof.
But I've never heard of painting it white. We need to have a discussion about raising the roof. No, folks, that does it for us today. Tomorrow's Friday. We've made it through the whole week. We'll get you squared up and set for the weekend as well. Have a great night. Back behind the mic with you tomorrow.